This episode of Film Sack brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK. Wake up, shake off that low-res 2004 gear you got on. Let's go.
We are haunted by sorrows we cannot name. People disappear, and our government denies these crimes. The good child regime provides for us as long as we stay quiet. So we trade freedom for a gilded cage.
Now, all I have is a mission. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 283. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, losing sleep and having bad dreams done away.
Hi. Oh, hey, monkey hand feet. Why don't you be my tripwire canary and run through this organic minefield of crazy dystopian weaponry so I don't get hurt? Spider walk, spider walk, spider walk. It's not right. Weirdos, a bunch of weirdos, I tell you.
I forgot she was in this, and I was really happy to have. She's the best thing in the movie because of the feet. That's it.
Yeah,
monkey hands. Yeah,
it's pretty great. It's
weird.
Also,
what'd you do? Replace your feet with monkey hands?
Right. She's got a foot somewhere else, if you know what I'm saying. Also with us, Randy, always wear all white when you're trying to stealth your way into a building at night. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Did I ever tell you guys about my old job installing sentient plant life security systems?
No.
Yeah, most people know about our papayas that shoot death darts and our patented murder grass. But there are actually some other better options for the horror horticulturalist. There was the colonic cactus, the anal asparagus, the rape fruit, and my favorite, the butthole-seeking flying pineapple. But our best seller, yeah, you know it. It was that murder grass. Little known secret. Wow. All you had to do to defeat the murder grass was walk on it while wearing, you know, shoes.
She needed gloves on those hand feet. That's all.
Yes, she did.
Some nice, thick, padded gloves. It would have been fine. Right. Finally with us, Brian. Yeah. Finally with us, Brian. He has hands where his feet should be, Ibbot.
That's a good theme. Today's movie is only 11 years old, but it's amazing how accurately it predicts things from 2016. Sure, we don't have huge hovering space manta rays for our cloning and lawns full of razor-sharp blades of grass for our home security, but with its story of a woman in an industrial gray utopian society who uncovers a conspiracy lurking beneath its leaders, Aeon Flux accurately predicts the plotline of every single young adult book film adaptation from 2008 and beyond.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, Brian Ibbot. That's really good. We just discussed that it's called Aeon Flux.
Oh, did I say Aeon? Did I say Aeon?
I don't care.
And I was like, oh, I don't need to phonetically type it into my notes.
Aeon Flux.
And before you get any more emails, isn't it like set 400 years in the future?
Yeah, it's 27... But whatever the hell it was, 2715 or something.
I didn't say that it, you know.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying it predicts some things that we actually have now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
The Donald Trump dystopian future that is surely ours to embrace. It's Aeon Flux, however the hell you say it. Aeon Flux. Aeon Flux.
Of that great British group, the Fluxstones.
When you need your lights replaced, call Aeon Flux. He'll take care of you. So,
I was actually really glad that they said her name repeatedly.
Me too.
Because
I
was worried they wouldn't, and I'd spend the whole movie wondering how they would say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see how much it helped me.
Well, they and as Dunaway pointed out pre-show, they seem to struggle with knowing how to say it consistently. Like, everybody seemed to have their own little spin on the name. But it's all based on that cartoon which never said the name. That was like basically a silent film except for sound effects. You never really heard. Nobody ever said, Aeon, come here. There was none of that. It was just like this weird, gangly, stringy-looking cartoon lady. That was
during the our early 90s extreme phase.
Yeah. And, Liquid Television, baby. That's what that was.
Yeah, MTV's Liquid Television, which was the whole astronaut introduction, which I loved. The astronauts, the MTV astronauts sitting in the audience in the theater. That was awesome.
Don't have those anymore.
That was my favorite part of the whole stupid movie.
Well, hold on a second. Now, best I can tell,
space popcorn.
There is something kind of weirdly, ethereally creepy about a bunch of spacemen with blank slate, you know, helmet shields that you can't really see their faces inside, all sitting in a movie theater waiting for a movie to start. That is a weird visual. And here's the thing, Aeon Flux, the cartoon, the animated thing, it always embraced absolutely the weirdest possible scenarios. Like the whole goal of that cartoon was about being weird, and it was so weird, like surreal weird, like weird that you couldn't explain, but kind of cool weird. Like, whoa, I don't know what they just did, but that's pretty rad.
And a super unique style to it too.
Yeah,
the style. Peter Chung's creation was just freaking amazing.
Yeah,
I love that.
He's
that
really
show.
Cool. He did that. Yeah. He did that pretty neat looking. I haven't seen the whole thing, but the Chronicles of Riddick thing.
Yes.
A few years later, he still does stuff. He did something with Diablo. It says on his Wikipedia page, but I can't confirm this. Something in 2012 with some short video for Diablo 3. Yeah. Is that true?
Don't you remember those videos?
I don't remember. No.
Little fan kind of videos.
Yeah, it came out about styles. 3 weeks before Diablo 3, and it had a little introductory video where some of the Blizzard creative guys were sitting around with Peter
Chung.
Yeah. And they had made this really awesome, just Google like Diablo anime.
Oh, all right.
And or something like
Peter
that.
Peter Chung is going to blow your mind.
It's the last thing he did. He hasn't done much since. Nothing since, really.
That's because they made this movie and it killed his soul.
I guess.
the animated short film is called Wrath.
All right. I'm going to check it out because I have no memory of that at all.
And I promise you, there's probably like episodes of podcasts where you talked about it.
I probably did.
You watched it. It was, everybody loved it.
No, I'm not. Hey, let me make this clear. I'm not. I'm pretty sure I don't remember it because I'm an idiot, mainly. That's my main reason. So Aeon Flux is the movie, and we'll play Scott Fletcher's thing here in a second. But I just want to say, to finish my thought about the spacemen in the movie theater, that opening MTV thing embraced weird in a way that the cartoon did more than this movie did. And that's my chief problem with it, because there's some moments of like, all right, that's pretty weird. Now hang on to that. You keep being weird. Don't you go not being weird. And then they would go, but we want a traditional love story or some other bullshit to ruin it. So
it's a straight up action film, and it's a, you know, it's got sci-fi elements, but I mean, it really follows an action plot, which there isn't a lot of room for weirdness in it. You know, there's moments where it stops and it's like, let's get a close up of someone's eye. But then, you know, it has to hurry up and have a car chase.
It's afraid to do it. It's afraid to go full weird is the problem.
Right. And the only weirdness, I think the only person that got the weirdness of this whole feeling it should have was probably the casting director, because they casted some really unique looking faces for this movie.
Yeah, hand foot lady. She is a weird looking lady. Like in a way that's
McDormand, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until this movie.
Yeah, Pete Postlethwaite in his freaking burrito suit he's wearing, whatever that was.
I love that. That thermal,
traffic cone.
And occasionally you'd see something like that and go, oh, okay, that's weird. Keep that going. That's weird. And then it would be, traditional fight scene that's not all that well choreographed. And where were the Wachowski brothers, now sisters, today? Where were they then? Why couldn't they have put their stamp of approval on this? And, you know, I don't know. But anyway,
because this was trying to be The Matrix. I mean, this movie. Yeah,
it's a good point.
You know, I'm sure we're getting to it, but
I just like to point out the Wachowskis weren't doing crap at the time. Like apparently it's not easy to make The Matrix, or they would have done things like it again and again.
Yeah, including the other two Matrix movies that were not near, near as good. Yeah.
The ones that don't exist.
Aeon Flux is the third crappiest Matrix sequel.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Also, a crossover. Peter Chung did was in bed with the Animatrix.
Animatrix, which is awesome.
Oh, I was gonna say he was in bed with the Wachowski brothers. What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's right. That's what he did.
I didn't know Peter Chung did one of those. Did he?
He did. Yeah. Probably the most prominently displayed one too on the as far as like on the cover of the Blu-ray.
Is it the people? It was the most. Is it the one with the guys up in the feudal Japan fight on the roof? It's not that
it's
one.
It's the matriculated. How do you say it? The matriculated segment. I'm trying to remember which segment that is. I visually remember, but I don't remember.
It's not the one where the robots rise up. Oh, I got to go look now. Everything about his work compels me, but it's funny that I don't remember any of it. So I need to, that's a strange thing to be a fan of a thing you don't actually know much about.
The power of Chung compels you.
Yeah, it really does. Everybody.
Didn't Scott Fletcher say something about this movie?
Yeah, he did. Let's check it out. Well, he's going to Peter Chung tonight. Here we go. We got to find him. Where'd he go? Here he is. Here's Scott Fletcher with more.
Aeon Flux is a mysterious assassin working for the Monikans, a group of rebels trying to overthrow the government. When she is sent on a mission to kill the chairman, a whole new mystery is found.
So the city in the cartoon was called Monica, but they didn't call it that here. They called it something else.
So I just want to make my first controversial statement, by the way.
I actually
think this is a cleanup of that story. I think this is tighter and better.
Of what?
You think it's a cleanup of the story from the animated series?
Yeah. With I find the two cities very uncompelling. The idea that everybody's, and I realize it's an arc trope in this movie. Right. I realize that.
Yeah.
But I actually find it more entertaining that everybody's stuck in this arc, and there's a sort of literal arc hanging in the sky above them. I actually found that more entertaining than the idea of two cities, because it felt cleaner and tighter to me. Like we could get through the story faster.
All right,
I do want to get through the story as fast as possible.
you brought up the weird floating bladder thing, so I need to address it now. Yeah. What the hell was that? What was the point of that?
You see all over in Zingermarsh.
The DNA, DNA dropper.
All right.
As I saw Chekhov's blimp, I knew. The climax of the story is going to go there.
Here's my problem. You got to see, that's weird, and I'm into it. Like, I'm into a big space bladder flying around the thing with a burrito man in it. I love that. That whole idea is great, and I love the idea of that being mysterious and hard to figure out and all this stuff. But she's planting a traditional bomb in there, and all their guns have bullets, and. She's got a little secret compartment in her shoe like James Bond and putting a little poison thingy in there. And it's just there's too much like grounded in traditional action movie stuff combined with the weird.
It's 400 years of technology. It's given us the ability to use micro robots to swim around in our bloodstream and help us escape from prison. But come on, man, we're not going to invent, airplanes or something.
You can't give me this is the future tech. You can't give me that crap when there's a dude walking around. Have you seen my daughter? Here's an amber picture.
We have all this technology, but I had to print this on a bar of soap.
Right.
It was like the little thing in Jurassic Park with a bug in it. That's what it looked like. Mm-hmm. It's like we're going to.
Yeah. Here's my Amber daughter. Yep. Her name's Amber.
Her name
and
is.
Everything else we've improved, but the reproduction of a person's face.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I'm okay with that. Those choices, if they're consistent across the board, if it's weird across the board, I'm actually kind of on board. And the whole thing is only an hour and a half long. So it's blissfully short, which is good in this case, because it's really, if they drug this out to 2 hours, what the hell are we doing?
Can you believe there's a director's cut that's 30 minutes longer?
Oh my gosh.
I am both intrigued and horrified at the same time.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I would be interested in seeing the extra 30 minutes so that I could decide if it was a producer failure that put this movie in a class of suck.
Yeah.
Because
I
don't feel like I'm with you, Scott, when you said earlier, I don't think the spirit of the animation bled through here, because it's just not, they just didn't amp it up enough. It felt very, across the board, just normal.
Yeah.
The only thing that was weird was Monkey Hand Feet and the way that Aeon Flux scurried across. When I was like, "Don't scurry. That looks weird. Don't don't do that spider walk
crab thing. Walk just, thing." Yeah.
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah, great. And they didn't stick with that. Also, I think they realized, "Oh, this isn't working."
Yeah, you know? They should have cut that. Yeah, exactly. They should have said, that's not going to work. Don't do it. Don't do that. No. Yeah.
And it feels like a, you know, weirdness for weirdness sake, right? I mean, it's like, all right, we're going to have this, this door, these pair of doors in the main room in the hive, basically, that open like camera shutters, but really no reason other than just because cool. They look cool.
They look cool.
Yeah.
That's all of the wardrobe decisions in this movie follow that exact same pattern.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's I'm fine.
No reason for it. Yeah. Let's just do it.
I'm fine with that. If that's all, if you lean all in, like that's my whole problem. It's not so much that I like mysterious, weird for no reason, weird for weird's sake. I'm cool with that. If that's what you really sell that and buy into that and say, you know what? We don't care. We're going full weird. But they didn't do that. They held back. They'd be like, oh, she's got this ring with little flat things she can flip around like coins. And later they come back as explosive balls. That's kind of cool, but it seems dumb when it's paired up with just traditional action crap. It just should have been weird all the time.
Right. And I was worried this was going to happen. I was worried that we were going to be a bunch of book readers and go, this isn't like the book. And, you know, is there anything sacred about the animated feature? There's nothing, or the animated shorts. There's nothing sacred about it. But if you're going to fall so far away from the material and the feel, just write a different story. I mean, they could easily call this anything besides Aeon Flux. Cut the couple of little spider walk thing that she did. Cut a couple of the scenes where they, you know, tried to use a little bit of the style. And just call this a straight up movie about, you know, dystopian future, children of men kind of thing. I mean, you didn't have to burn Aeon Flux for this. You didn't have to do that. You could just went somewhere else.
Especially didn't, considering that nobody really wanted to go see the movie.
Yeah, it did bad.
Right.
It
failed.
It failed bad, hard.
Like maybe it would have done better if it had been called Equilibrium.
It always bodes poorly when they won't even do a screener for critics. They did not screen this thing beforehand. They knew they were sending out was poo.
Yeah, they
do. You hear that all the time. I'd like to see like a Star Wars movie not screened for critics, just to like blow everybody away.
Well, sometimes they don't care. Like the studios is like, we know this is going to make billions and it may or may not be well received critically, but we don't care because it's going to make millions. And so who cares? But a lot of times it's, especially with a movie that's untested or a director nobody's heard of or whatever, if something doesn't get screened for critics a week ahead, that is almost always a bad sign. Like, oh, it's pretty good litmus test of how crappy your movie is.
And this is kind of that word of mouth that destroys a movie after opening weekend has a really good opening weekend. This movie had a really good opening weekend, just like Batman versus Superman, but a huge decline, like a 67% decline after the first week because of word of mouth. Kind of like Superman, the Batman Superman.
Yeah, how's that doing this? I guess this weekend's just starting, or just is happening. And so we don't know what the follow-up returns is. That was the thing when I saw it last week, I thought, this is not going to go 2 weeks of amazing money. Okay. There's no way. Like, I just can't say
The thing I always check is it still in the IMAX? And yes, Batman versus Superman is still in the IMAX. And so, I don't want to... If you know what, if they put a different movie in the IMAX, I'd probably go see the different movie.
Yeah,
that's weird.
You can go see like. Well,
doesn't that also depend on something IMAX worthy that comes out take its place? Like, if they don't have something that's.
I agree with Ibit, because I saw Sucker Punch like the third week in the IMAX theater, and I was the only person in there. Yeah.
Wow. They're not going to put God's Not Dead 2 into
IMAX.
Oh,
I wish they would.
Hey, does Kevin Sorbo come back as a zombie? Or like,
no.
Okay,
no,
forget
it's a completely
forget
different
it.
Cast. God's you can only trick people dead. Into yeah. making one of those movies once. You know, like this one's got Melissa Joan.
Dead is the sequel.
This one's got Melissa Joan Hart in it, for example. You know, you can only trick people once.
They should change it from God's Not Dead 2 to God Is Not Dead Also.
Hold on. I'm sorry, I've just been told there is an exception. Dean Cain wanted to be in the second one.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, did you guys see that tweet from Dean Cain that he fell asleep in Batman versus Superman? Said he was bored.
I think that's great.
Really?
Yeah, I want all the former Supermen to like comment on how they didn't like that movie. I think that would be really funny.
Who was
Love
the
story wasn't good enough.
What's the actor from Smallville?
Tom Welling.
Tom Welling, I want him. Yeah, do we follow him on Twitter? Let's go.
I don't. What's he doing? What's he up to? You know he's got talent. What's he up to?
Or what's his face? Ray Palmer from The Legends of Tomorrow. Who's that? Yeah. What was that guy's name? Not Henry Campbell. What's the
Ernest Borgnine? I don't know. have no idea.
Can we, by the way, can we have more Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck together out in reality doing whatever?
Yeah, that, have you guys seen that video where they're talking about the bad reviews and somebody said it to
music?
Oh,
yeah, the sad Affleck thing. It's really good.
Do you remember when Get Hard was coming out and Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell were just, you know, appearing on late shows as cab drivers in a sketch and whatever? Like, that's what I want, these two guys. I want Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill.
By the way,
I was trying to come up with.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Now, I know I know we're all over the map here, but I have to at least cue in a little bit on this Kevin Hart comment you made. Kevin Hart, does he have a contract that says, I'm going to do my stand-up, okay, and I'm a little short guy on stage, and it's great, and everyone loves me. But then in movies, I'm sorry, I can't be in your movie unless it's some sort of buddy cop unit deal. Yeah, it has to be me and another guy constantly.
The Ride Along he did as well. And,
and that new one with The Rock is the exact same damn thing that's coming out.
All right.
What the hell, dude?
Or it has to be, be a bachelor party scenario. No.
Sure. I need you to back up off my boy, Kevin Hart.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I love Kevin Hart. Like, nobody's business.
He made a mistake with that commercial at the Super Bowl. I'll give you that. That was for the money.
Okay.
But
that was for the money.
The rest of it is for shits and giggles. But
I've seen 2,000 stand-up comedians perform. He is among the best. His stand-up is just fast and furious.
Yeah,
I agree.
He's really good. I'd say that about Cat Williams, and everybody hates Cat Williams, but
he gets beat up all the time now.
Got beat up by a middle schooler the other day. But Cat Williams, when I used to see him at a comedy club standing with a microphone and that was it, was a genius. And Kevin Hart fits that description.
No, I agree. He's a very funny guy. There's nothing to do with that. I'm saying his movie contracts suck because all he does...
His choices. He can't make choices to save his life.
Yeah.
But
they're just, it's just weird. Let's do a movie where we're in a car and I'm sitting on the other side of the car with another guy. That's the movie. Woohoo!
But he likes doing them. Maybe that's his thing. I'm down with that.
Yeah, when he and Ice Cube were promoting Ride Along, it was really funny. Like, you saw that video, right? Where they're in the back of the car and driving around with white people.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually the best out of all his buddy cop movies. I think that one's probably
Ride
my
Along.
Favorite.
Is that the ice? Yeah. That's the Ice Cube one, right? So
that's,
I have it straight. Okay.
Yeah, where he's dating Ice Cube's sister. And so, yeah, that was fun. I love seeing Ice Cube being pissed.
See,
that's what he does best.
All you have to do is say anything about any of these Kevin Hart movies, and I feel like I've seen them all, and I probably haven't even seen one of them.
Yeah, you would know. Scott Johnson would never stop talking about Get Hard if he'd ever seen it, because there's a sequence where Will Ferrell takes a naked penis in the face.
Whoa,
a naked penis. Now, a naked penis.
Judging by that reaction, we can confirm Scott has
not seen Get Hard.
That sounds awesome. All right, I'm in. I'm going to watch Get Hard.
Oh, please don't.
Okay.
Well, speaking of stuff that grosses people out, that exchange, that tongue exchange was made all the worse by the slobbery noises they made with it.
I tried to capture it, but the music kind of drowned it out. But it was like this disgusting, like, dog licking his unit kind of sound. It was awful.
It's the thing that I hate about Hardee's commercials. It's like, hey, here's a burger. Won't you listen to somebody masticate? No.
We're going to build this commercial burger 3 times the size of any burger you could actually buy.
Yeah. Commercial burgers are the best. But commercial burgers are the best burgers, though. They're really big. They're juicy. And I'm telling you, do you guys remember, this may have come up before, maybe it was on TMS, but this always happens, Brian. I always think of stories that maybe we talked about, but we haven't on here. But anyway, do you guys remember when Carl's Jr., that's right, Carl's possessive
versus
apostrophe
Hardee's.
S Jr.
Right.
We explained why that's a thing, by the way.
I still hate it.
No, I'm just saying. So we talked about why that's a thing, so we don't need to make it like, you know.
I know. It's not fresh out of Scott's dumb oven. I know what you mean, but it's still it's still dumb. I still hate it. But anyway, they have this commercial with this totally hot babe, you know, doing her supermodel business, and she's in the car. And
it's Kate Upton, right?
No, this is different. Okay. So this is a person with a normal torso. This is earlier. And So she's eating one of these burgers in the car, and the cop comes to like bust her or something. And it's basically one giant innuendo for And she's like kind of showing her crotch and talking all like saucy about vagina issues and stuff, but she's talking about the burger. Anyway, it was so
it's so dry.
It was
yeasty.
But the innuendo is more like the sauce on her face, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, there was a bunch of that, and she kept talking about anyway. I still can't find this on YouTube, but I swear there's a version of the commercial that is so overtly that way, and then they changed it because they got in trouble or something, and then it was like much more toned down. And to this day, nobody's been able to show me those two videos. So maybe I dreamed it. Maybe I just saw this pretty lady with a burger twice the size of her head, and I thought my own thoughts. I don't know. I don't know why I'm bringing this up.
Always puke up those Scott, burgers right after that. There's no way they eat those burgers and stay that small.
No.
Scott, maybe you dreamed it because it's a memory from your past clone life.
Eon Flux.
Wow. Way to bring it back.
Yeah, I like this. This bringing it back is working today. It's good. I like it. So Charlize Theron. Let's talk about her for just a second. She's made some deal with like High Lord Satan or something, because she doesn't look any older in Mad Max Fury Road than she does in this. And this was 11 years ago. She's pushing 40 if she's not already there. 75.
Yes,
she's born in 75.
She's 40.
Okay. So
when did she lose her arm?
that would have been 2015.
Was it like a Corvette summer kind of thing?
Only Sean Penn knows how that arm was gone. Mm-hmm. Sean Penn. Now, I'm not throwing any shade on Sean Penn. I'm just saying. But anyway, my point there was that she is youthful for eternity. I don't know that she's ever going to look old. She looks amazing.
You know, she reminds there's two actors in Hollywood that seem very similar in work ethic and personality. And I feel like Charlize Theron is like the mirror image of Christian Bale on the other side.
I feel like
they're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. She takes her craft very seriously I can totally see that.
I don't know. I don't feel like we ever saw the real Christian Bale until The Big Short. Now that is Christian Bale for me.
American Hustle is a great example of like, you know, him just completely launching a character. What was the one? The Fighter, actually, before that.
Mm-hmm. No. He's great in everything, but that was a titular moment in The Big Short where a realization for me where I went, holy shit, this guy isn't just, he's not Batman anymore. There's no Batman here. This is like something special. And it makes me wonder why he, with his brilliant method acting approach, and Christopher Nolan with his incredible vision, couldn't figure out a better voice for Batman when he was doing the guttural voice. It was terrible. It wasn't even good. I'm into somebody talking like this, but he was like, listen, I've got it. I mean, it was just shit.
That's actually pretty good.
No, it was
you did pretty good.
It was shit.
Christian Bale Batman.
It was garbage. And they need to go back and redub that whole thing. And you know what? The best thing about Batman versus Superman, the new one, this isn't really a spoiler, but they give, to give Batman a changed voice, they give him a voice modulator that Alfred works on. By the way, Alfred is like jack of all trades in this thing. He's like, does everything.
Yeah, he's MacGyver.
Which
he shouldn't be.
Anyway.
Charlize Theron in this movie, Eon Flux.
Hold on, you're saying it wrong. I got a pronunciation for you here. Listen to this. Listen to this.
How do you actually pronounce your name?
Charlize Theron.
I must prefer that.
Charlize Theron.
Anyway, that lady. How many necks does she crack? Because that was like
Through the hallway. Throwing my discs on the floor, attacking all the guards hallway scene is like 7 or 8 necks right there.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep.
So many necks.
Is it bad that I pictured her friend with the feet hands? Here's something I pictured, and you guys just have to just come with me on this, all right? Okay. So whenever this happens in movies a lot. It's a kind of a trope where usually a woman who's being held against her will, or somebody's creeping up on her or something, she'll reach out, grab a guy's crotch, and basically now he's in the worst pain ever, and he'll do whatever, give me the keys, give me the whatever, right?
Yeah.
In my head, I pictured a moment where she would have to do that, and it would be four guards all standing around in those stupid gray guard suits and their guns. Mm. and her spread out like an X with four guards gripping all of their crotches at once.
Once again, Scott,
I like this idea.
What are you on, man?
But just imagine
what
the visual.
What color is the sky in your world?
Just imagine the visual. She could take on four guards. They would be completely at her whim. Drop your guns, and they'd have to drop them because she's just holding them. Just they'd be standing there, just
Mexican,
going all
a Mexican ball off is what you're imagining, right? that is.
That's not a real thing, is it?
I hope not.
Okay. Oh, no. I was excited for a second.
The problem I had with Monkey Hand Feet was that she was the only person who was apparently having this procedure, because no one else, they never addressed it again. No one else had monkey hand feet. No one else was, you know, putting appendages places they didn't belong. But
cloning Flex error.
Cloning error. I like that.
Yeah, cloning error. Whoops. Sorry about
that.
Well,
she brought it. The way she brought it up, it made it sound like it was a thing they were all considering. Because she says, "Oh, have you decided to do it yet? No, I like my shoes too much." And that implied that, this is the next level for, you know, it's a thing everyone's doing it, basically. But then you're right, Brian, nobody else had feet on their hands or their foot on their
hands. I was expecting to see that, you know, on the streets. By the way, the person who did, I did no research as far as who did the costuming for this, but I really felt like it could not have been more TV or more bland with the costuming. And I thought about Randy, because I'm like, Randy's pretty big into makeup and the costuming. And go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Other than like the two or three main characters in the film, everybody else, it's just really boring.
They had neon ninjas. I mean, they were wearing like neon colors, fighting each other, and it was just
the townspeople or the city people. All to me, they looked like Star Trek Next Generation third season planet we visited. Don't tell them that we're from the outer space because they're not ready for it yet. Prime directive
in 2005. People, that's when this movie was. Yeah. So, yeah.
It doesn't. So, I mean, in some ways, some of the effects are like cool. They hold up. Like when her hand foot gets into the sharp grass,
the glass, yeah,
and then comes up. That looked pretty cool. You know, there were some. I'm trying to think of some other moments now.
A lot of Fangor in this.
Let's talk about that murder grass for a minute. I'm just blown away at how inefficient and ultimately bad that security system is.
Right.
Like, why the hell would you? Why any of it? Why? Why would this security system be this? Why would they come at it without, you know, shields and thick soles on their shoes? You know, I don't understand.
That's, I can tell you the answer. They were trying to be weird and they didn't embrace. They didn't go full weird. That's it. That's all it is. Because I know they're sitting around going, all right, guys, remember, source material here. This is Aeon Flux. It's freaking weird. All right. But people have to talk to each other and there's got to be these relationships. And the guys in the suits at the production company said, we can't do this. And so they're just like barely tiptoeing into the weird and going, what if these papayas shot out these really cool darts that like injected poison into people? That'd be neat. But then we have to be normal again. And that makes it seem really stupid. Like, I think it would have been okay if the whole world was just, you know, insane. It's a terrible idea. Put big mounted guns that pop up out of the ground and shoot people. You don't need papayas.
Right. The only thing that failed from... Oh, I'm sorry, you were still... Finish your thought, Randy, on the...
No,
Garden of Terror.
Maybe the answer is that we thought this would look cool, and I can handle that, but all I need you to do is go back and make the story fit the look. You know, that's all I need. All I needed was for these two women who are assaulting this compound and dealing with murder grass to, you know, to strap on their big soled shoes before they go in and grab a couple of, you know, a couple of plexiglass shields. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like, okay, they're as smart as they're being portrayed.
Yeah.
True story.
Nice
true story.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, I've totally forgotten now. I think it was something to do with the stupid technology of the stupid future.
Yeah, was it about her? Was about her barely getting her face into some murder grass by holding her?
I really felt like Monkey Hand Feet really got the raw end of the deal, because she was she was there for no other reason than to trip all the traps.
Right.
So that Elon could get through. Yeah,
exactly.
What a crap role.
You go ahead. I will totally follow you. I'm right behind you.
Yeah, right here all the way.
It's the role of the fullback in American football, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be my fullback.
Right.
Hey, when she fell off the tower at the end, when she got blown off there and she fell, because I thought they were just going to blow her up and that would be enough. But when she fell off and whipped around a bunch of times and then saw the ground coming up, Were we to believe that that was murder grass again? Like for the grass had finally won?
I think that's what we're supposed to believe.
Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't figure like they needed to be murder grass because I think the fall would be enough to kill her. And the explosion.
Yeah.
I think the reason why I realized it was going to be murder grass is because that scene went on for like almost a full minute of her falling.
Of her falling.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's not going to be bad because she survived that.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's what I mean.
Murder grass down there?
Yeah, that's what I mean, because when I saw it, I thought, well, this is... Why didn't you just kill her in the air? Like, what are we doing here? And then I thought, oh, because there's some murder grass down there.
I thought it was maybe an homage for just a second, because Aeon Flux, the animated series, at the end of each one of them, they did that, oh my God, you killed Kenny thing, because every time she would usually be in a situation where she was dying, but she was so curious about completing the mission or seeing how the mission completed, she would live long enough to view that, and then it will usually end with a black screen.
Yeah, or she'd
and
die so horribly, though. Really horribly every time.
Exactly. Every time was usually a really horrible death. So I was expecting that to be an homage, like she was gonna maybe look and see the something else happening while she was falling, but they didn't portray that.
They didn't do it. So according to the Wikipedia article on the film, the way that they accomplished, or they think they accomplished, making that reference to what the cartoon did every episode, was this whole cloning and rebirth thing. In their minds, that was enough to be a reference to that. Yeah. Which I don't think is nearly enough, but anyway.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So you've got this conceit. It's a big reveal, right? It's not exactly a twist, but it's a big reveal in this movie that everyone are clones. They are not able to have babies. And they describe cloning totally wrong. It's not how cloning works. That's not how any of this works. But let's just give them the story that they want to tell. How in the world are the people in this world not aware of it is what I'm trying to figure out. Mm. Because, like, if you're not having babies, but you're being, like, handed a baby.
Well, explained it. They explained that. Yeah. In the
pregnant through your food.
Well, they get a trigger through the food that they're pregnant, and then they go to the doctor, and then they're inseminated with the DNA. So I mean, and then they really are pregnant. And
well,
go to term,
do they go
right?
up Isn't to the do they go up to the big bladder in the sky? Is that how they do
no,
it?
No, they just go to the doctors. The bladder in the sky was just a database and storehouse for the DNA and kept it
it's
safe
already,
so that it could be
it's already delivered the babies or produced the babies that are going to get.
So it's a stork blimp. That's what it is.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
DNA
at all.
Stork blimp.
Didn't the cartoon have the space bladder too? Didn't it?
Yeah.
You never knew what it was, but it was floating around the town all the time or something.
I think it was multiple ones. Yeah.
I remember that somehow.
And so it actually makes me ask the question, why? Why didn't I pick up on this? Like, I think it was because I was too busy paying attention to the weird wardrobe in the film.
Right.
Like all men dressed like hobos and all women dressed like BDSM. at all times, even when you sleep, sleep, you have to be wearing some kind of choker teddy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bizarre.
And that was the only time they really gave an homage to one of the outfits that she wore in the animation. Cause I was like, that is totally impractical for sleeping, at least it is a throwback to
that was the only, that's the only outfit that actually matched the original animation, which makes me wonder if people liked that animated thing back in 91, because they were all 12 and this was a hot cartoon girl. You know what I mean?
We had stepped up from Chitara from Thundercats to this.
Yeah.
This was our,
Was there watch an entire episode of the animated series?
You've never seen it?
I've never seen an entire episode because I would always lose interest. I love the art style, and that's what would pull me in. It's like, all right, this is just too.
For me, I was still in that ridiculous phase where anything on MTV that wasn't a music video, I was all mad at it. Why didn't you show music?
Yeah. I hate Puck. I can't watch that stupid Real World.
And the thing is, I was such a hypocrite. I watched every episode of that first season of Real World. What a hypocrite.
Yeah. Well, it was the world's first. I mean, really, you could put lay at its feet. It's the first real reality show. Yeah. There's nothing like it before that, as far as I know.
Right.
All right. So the director is a lady, and she's done stuff and nothing really amazing. Let's see. I don't know.
She's done, don't say that, because she has done some pretty good. At its heart, what this movie was trying to be was to give us an action heroine. a woman who would go on to do these great, amazing, acrobatic, just a big killing machine. But I think that my favorite woman action hero has got to be Mia Jovovich. How do you say her name? Mia, what's her last name?
Jovovich.
I love her. And Ultraviolet came out the next year. And I think if you're looking for an action heroine, I think that that's probably got a lot.
That's
more
a slightly better movie. It's a slightly better film.
There's a trope here that I didn't really even think about until you just brought her up, because in The Fifth Element, you can't really call her a lead because she's ignorant the entire film. She's almost she's almost like a shell of a person in The Fifth Element.
Well, she's Lila Multipass. That's why she didn't know, you know.
And in this film, I felt a lot of the same stuff. Like, oh great, you're almost giving me Jane Bond. But she doesn't know what's going on ever. And she just becomes a zombie when instructions are inserted into her. And you know what I mean? Like, that's a trope. That's not getting me fully there. In Fury Road, she's actually a person.
Yeah. You know? And she's more full. What's funny is with less dialogue, less setup, less character development in Fury Road, she's a way more fleshed out character than she ever is in this. And I don't, you know, you can say this about a lot of characters, but I'm just, if we're talking about Charlize Theron in her various roles, she's so much more of a full character in that movie than this. And that says something. And I don't know what it is, because they're both trying to be visual stories. They're both trying to tell, outlandish fantasy tales. And that one just does it so much better,
This one feels like a music video, and that one feels like a fully realized world.
Yeah,
it really, this movie really feels like it was written by a 14-year-old boy. The dialogue is so unrealistic. Mm-hmm. It takes you right out of the movie all the time.
Well, Karen Kasuma is her name, and she did some other stuff that's interesting. Girl Fight's actually kind of a cool movie. It came out in 2000, five years before this. She did Jennifer's Body in 2009, which did not do well. And lately does a lot of TV. She did an episode of The Man in the High Castle, which I loved. She did a good episode too, actually. She did Chicago Fire, a bunch of stuff like that. So she did an L Word episode that has lesbians in it,
and a really good
Say which one, Brian?
Casual. It was a recommendal I gave you guys a while back. It was a Hulu sitcom about a woman and her daughter to go live with her brother, and
he's
kind of a horrible man child. It's great. It's a really, really good show.
Yeah. I need to watch that still. It's on this list of things that I'll never see. Do you think this is 2005. Do you think they just snuck up on Frances McDormand and said, you need to do a shitty thing in your career. Here, do this one.
I think they did that with a lot of people. I mean, this is right in Johnny Lee Miller's, right in his wheelhouse, basically.
For a second, I thought you were going to say it's in Johnny Weir's wheelhouse. I was going to go, yeah, Johnny Weir would dress up just like Francis McDormand.
This actually would be perfect for Johnny Weir. He could play all the characters. He could do the Eon Flux one-man show on Broadway.
I'm glad you brought him up, though. I forgot about Johnny Lee Miller even being in this. Like, I completely spaced it until you just said that.
With his weird American accent, his weird... fake American accent.
Right.
But no, I mean, Pete Postlethwaite, Frances McDormand, all these great, really talented actors who've won acclaim and Oscars and recognition.
Yeah.
And it's like they drugged them.
they did. It really did.
Yeah. I would love to have heard her when she's given one of her messages to have her just go, is that your friend back there in the chipper then? That would have really made my day.
I knew this movie. I have my fiance is a great person to watch films with, because I can really tell how clear a movie is when she asks me questions like, who's that guy that just got killed? Who is that? Is that like his friend? I was like, it's his brother. Have you not seen any of this movie? Yes, it's like, so I know if it's not clear that she's going to tell me, she's going to, I'm just like, this is the stupidest movie
ever. No, I like that. That's always great to have somebody around like that, is looking at it from those eyes, because it makes you question, sometimes you just sort of accept it and go, yeah, whatever. But then they'll point it out and you go, that is lazy, crappy filmmaking.
I've seen a lot of stupid movies, so I know where they're going lots of times.
Mm-hmm. But there's a really fine line between trusting the audience to figure it out and telling them too much. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It is tough.
And this film tried with Frances McDormand's character. She's the handler, right? She's this strange agent that gives people instructions, and you can't figure out whether she's actually working for the government or working for the rebels. Yeah. And I mean, until you figured out. And I, the whole time, you know, like, she's never really described very well. And I would rather that be that way than to stop the whole film and have someone tell someone else what the handler is.
Oh, I agree. So I agree. Know. No, she's the kind of device that you want her to be that way. Like, I actually, you know, if I'm gonna say my favorite things about the movie, because there's some redeeming stuff here. For me, it's her, and her remaining a mystery. I don't need her fleshed out. I got enough from what I saw. And I think Burrito Man in Burrito Man form was enough for me. I didn't need to see him back in the day.
No more. It was visually fun to see. I was thinking, did they put him in that because he's trying to lick his butthole? Is it like, why is he in that dog cone shame thing?
He just got spayed and he'd be licking the surgery wounds. Perfect.
Oh my gosh. You're killing me. Killing me, dude. You're killing me. That is really funny.
That is the best.
That is really funny. Yeah,
I thought Frances McDormand's character was kind of, she was, her whole scene was, they filmed it all in one shot, probably. They dressed her up, do her hair one day, a couple hours. She's always in that one shot.
Yeah.
Help me out here, because every time I saw Frances McDormand in this film, I thought, oh, I've seen this before. What movie has a person with a shocking red hair everywhere that where she's both, or he or she is both backlit and front lit, so they're blown out, right, and they look like,
what's her face from Effie Trinket from the Hunger Games, right? Maybe,
right? I can see that. I can
no?
see that.
Something
yeah, but that wasn't what I was.
I just, she was also giving
it felt
me
like
Tim
I've seen
Burton's
this before.
Wife impression.
There is something. Anyway. There is something reminiscent about it, and I can't put my finger on it either. It's, maybe I'm thinking of this, but I can't think of what it would be. Like, there's, I mean, the idea, whatever, the whole construct they make there with, like, here, take a pill that another guy didn't quite dissolve yet, put that in your gut, and now appear half naked in a little white getup in this weird room where I'm way up here and you're way down there. Like, it's such a weirdly specific way to communicate.
Right.
But so arbitrary.
It made me, I was trying so hard to think maybe they're trying to give us some kind of deeper idea about things. And so when she put that that chemical communicator into that little vial, that little glass bottle, and and she didn't find out until later that it was a message. And I was like, oh, it's a message in a bottle. And I'm like, no, they didn't think of that. That's just what I'm trying to fill in some blanks.
That's way more clever than they were.
Right.
No. I want an eyeball where I can flick my head back and a big black sensor comes out front. See, again, that's kind of cool, except you're not embracing it. Yeah.
Right. She should have been like, all these things were like great one-time use things. The metal explosive balls that come out of your ring, the
okay,
eye
stop.
Thing that you can
hold
use.
On.
Yeah. Okay.
you can't convince me that she assaulted that compound to kill him thinking she was going to get imprisoned. And that's what that's the weird right. thing to me. It's like, right. how did she have the perfect preparation for this predicament that, you know, like.
Oh, it's the total James Bond thing, right? Except we don't get the scene with Q at the beginning where he gives her the ring and says, be careful with this, Eon.
Please, James.
It's a ring that has little metal balls and they're going to explode. Do pay attention, Eon.
That's a pretty good cue. That's a really good cue. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, these are all one-use little MacGyver items that, just happen to be the perfect thing to help her get through this one situation. Have I been poisoned? Oh, I know. I'll use this thing that would be great if I could use throughout the movie for other things. But shake my head and I all of a sudden have a little microscope eye.
I do love the idea that little steely balls will come do my bidding if I whistle at them. I like that.
that was fun.
That's pretty
I
great.
I enjoyed that part because I was a big fan of you remember the Space Giants during the 70s?
No, what is Space Giants?
Oh, that was like, it was live action crossover that we had Japan made these, I think it was Japan made these great live action kind of Ultraman kind of things.
Oh yeah.
And
there's
one of
whole episode. You'll love this, Brian. Whole episodes on YouTube, by the way. You'll love that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I have DVDs for this too, but it's the kid had like a whistle and he could control he could call the robots, and there was a gold robot and a silver robot. And that whole thing was just like, ooh, this takes me back. And I enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed the scene, the study, Goodchild's study area with the spider leather belt transport thing.
The thing that kinda connects you to the other.
Yeah. Like the other dimension.
Is it a teleporter or was it like just I just happened to keep my lab in another dimension or something.
Yeah, I think it was another dimension. And I actually enjoyed that part. I thought, wow, I wish it could have went further, especially when she sucked the bodyguard up into the other dimension and threw her down on the gas vent things. And I was like,
but again, the trope of the cool thing that we're only going to really use once, because established that you could evade flying bullets by flipping to the other dimension, I'm like, okay, I'd do that all the time.
Yeah, right. Oh, I could just use this forever. Cool. Need to escape? Boop.
Yep. What was with the big sphincter on the guy's wall that the lady shot through?
There was a lot of organic type technologies.
This movie loves mouths and eyes and ear holes and pores and so like that. And so it puts them everywhere.
Guns, man. Those are all pores.
Yeah, that's right.
It puts them everywhere. Like how do you get to the other dimension? You put on this extra layer of leather cat suit, like spider web thing, and what has it got right in the middle of it? A freaking mouth.
Right.
This movie loves that.
I call them, they're tree testicles. Let's get it straight. Tree testicles. Tree testicles.
They're so all tree testicles.
Oh, I love it.
Oh my gosh. All right. I got some quick trivia here. Apparently Darren Aronofsky was attached to the film to direct it and then quit. So I don't know why, but imagine that your fountain guy could have done it. And I know no one likes the fountain here, but me, but I,
was there a nod to that when she was giving her the fruit bath when she was,
I don't think so. That's not a terrible point, but here's the thing, Aronofsky, the thing I like about the fountain, which a lot of people hate the fountain, but that Hugh Jackman, Rachel Weisz movie, I like it because it, and I know I'm a broken record on this, but it embraces the weird and holds true the entire time. And you can hate that or love that, but at least they grabbed the weird by the hangy downs and never let go.
This is what you get Aronofsky for this. You get him for Black Swan or Requiem for a Dream. And he made one of my favorite films of the previous decade. I would say top 10 favorite films of the previous decade, which is The Wrestler, which is not surreal ever. Right. It's very realistic. But the dude made Noah, and I don't think he gets to ever work again.
I liked Noah. I know I'm in the minority. I liked how it was like, hey, these weird biblical rock creatures, we're just going to go ahead and make those real rock dudes. There was something cool about that. I don't know. I don't know what it is I liked about that movie, but I kind of liked it. I know it's not good. Look, you can't prove to me that it was good. It's not good, but I don't. Right. It's Waterworld good.
Visually, it looked good.
It's just
you
cool.
You don't love it. I'm just saying you don't love it because of Aronofsky. Good point.
Yeah, no, anybody could have done that movie. That's absolutely true. Yeah. Who did You Will Drink Your Milkshake? Who did that one?
There Will Be Blood was
not Aronofsky.
Anderson. Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas. I always get those two guys mixed up.
With Wes Anderson, right? Yeah, not Wes Anderson. Are you meet with Darren Aronofsky or with Wes Anderson?
I get Aronofsky and Paul Thomas Anderson. I get those two guys mixed up all the time because for whatever reason, I always feel like they're competing the same years for Oscars they're always considered such auteurs, and I get them mixed up. It's like, who did Magnolia? I don't know. Freaking one of those two guys did. Like, I always... I always get them mixed up. Anyway,
I think the defining characteristic of an Aronofsky film is it didn't need to be made. Like there's no reason for any of those movies to exist. They're, you know, like The Wrestler. Oh my gosh, there's that movie informs nothing in the real world. Oh,
come on, like Black Swan was fantastic and
right, but it didn't need to be made. It's just about the artistry of cinematography and dance. Like it's not.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
What needs to be made, though?
I think that's enough to make a movie. I don't think you have to have some kind of...
Well, name a movie that needs to be made. Like, I want to get my head around that kind of thinking, because everything doesn't need to be made.
Shawshank Redemption need to be made.
Yeah, and you have people say to each other, you know, if you haven't seen The Shawshank Redemption, you really should. You're going to enjoy it. No one has ever said that about Black Swan. And if you ever recommend Requiem to a Dream to someone, it better be because you're trying to get them into rehab. That's the only reason that you would recommend that film to a person. Like, I want you to watch this.
You really
want
to change your opinion about Jennifer Connelly? Yeah. I got a movie for you.
Yeah, no, yeah. I always say, like, you want to, you like Labyrinth, do you? Come over here, take a look at this.
Yeah. It's, seriously, Requiem for a Dream is like what you recommend is like, Brian Ibbett, I know you've been hitting the heroin really hard lately. I need you to watch this movie and then go to rehab.
It's going
to
change your life.
And he said, no, no,
watch
no.
Watch my pupils get big.
So there's this.
That was me describing that the scene from Requiem. Yeah.
So there is a. There, moving on to a much less foul moment. The Cladius is handling. There's a flower that Cladius is handling when Eon comes and confronts him about Una's death. It is a Raphelesia, and it's an actual flower that supposedly, quote unquote, smells like rotten meat. It is a local name translated into corpse flower, and it is commonly found in Southeast Asia. Yeah. It's official flower of Sabah, Malaysia. And I was digging around going, who in the hell in Sabah, Malaysia said, you know what, this one over here that smells like a dead person, we should make that our flower. What the hell were they thinking?
Well, it's funny. They had one of those here in Denver at the Botanical Gardens last year, and there were lines around the block exactly to see it bloom.
Why?
Like, you would have to wait in a multi-hour long line to get into the Denver Botanic Gardens to go see the stink blossom.
What was the
stink blossom?
Do you smell that? Do you smell it?
Oh, I saw a stink blossom in concert in '85. They were great. But wait a minute. Why were they in lines to do that? Is it just because it's so gross and they want to see it?
It's rare.
Doesn't it only
blossom like once every 100 years or something?
That's what you always hear.
It's called a lifetime event. Yeah, and you want to be there.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that kind of thing.
You got
to
do it.
Just to be clear, there's different flowers that are called corpse flowers. Mm. And the one that Scott named, the Raphelesia, is different than the one that was in Colorado was a Titan arum. Mm. And that's like it's like a big it's like a big cone.
Yeah,
and the one Scott's describing, you saw it in the movie. It's more like a lily,
right?
But anyway.
Okay, so there's
this isn't the flower. Randy. This isn't the flower that the lady from Fargo blew on her in the dream, is it?
No, not the little.
What was that about?
That's basically Wizard of Oz poppies.
Yeah, she disseminated the information through poppy pollen.
See, again, totally weird. Yeah. Great thing. Yeah. Keep it up. Don't.
Well, see, you say we need more weird, but have you ever seen The Cell?
Oh, The Cell.
Oh, that's a great example of let's just be weird for the whole movie, and it got so tiresome.
I
disagree with Scott on keeping weird through the whole thing. Give me weird with purpose. Like, tell me why the doors in his study look like a giant butthole. You know, make it. Give me a reason. Like, why?
Why do these look like a butthole? I want to know.
All right.
There's a flood, those things will just pucker up and keep this room dry.
What we're talking about here is world building. And world building is hard. Randy said it earlier, not in these same terms, but world building is very hard to do. And George Miller has proven that you can be a great world builder without saying much about it. And so in a true master's hands, it totally can be done. I was trying to think of another movie where the weird just sort of works for me. And I think it's probably... and weird with purpose, like Brian says. And that's what I want here, too, by the way. So me complaining that they're not leaning into it is that they're not leaning into it with purpose. They're just having it as window dressing and not
Well, then we agree, Scott.
We totally agree. But here's my main point. If I was to pick a movie out of all the movies I've ever seen that I thought where the weird worked and felt like weird with purpose, it's probably Brazil. That movie's weird as shit, but feels like...
I would say Minority Report.
Yeah, I like that one. Weird.
I'll tell you what. My perception is that these things got tempered. So now you see a movie like Inception, and there's the weirdness, but it's not too weird. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kept in check.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember what I was going to say earlier. Now I was going to talk about the tech, and that was one of the things that I thought did work. The only scene that really just blew me away and felt like it was a reflection of what I expected was when she was disabling the monitoring system, the ring of tears that was falling down, and she kind of did a whole Mission Impossible,
her little drop down deal, sure,
right, and that felt very much like the animated series to me, because I was like, okay, so she's doing a lot of acrobatics and she's doing it really cool, and it seemed like it has purpose, and she's about to disrupt this technology using this vibrating ball.
This technology where, you know, you on a microchip, we could have done everything they're doing in that room, but no, let's go ahead and dedicate a giant pool of tears. Like, that's, see, and that's the problem, is you're trying to root it in reality because the world building sucks. It's not good world building. Like, in Mad, I'm sorry to keep bringing up Mad Max, but this is what I do. If you're watching Mad Max,
it's a great reference.
And you're like, oh, yeah, there's a group speaking, it looks like Russian, I think, from the accents, and all their cars have huge spikes on it. What a weird culture theirs must be. There's some weird faction out of someplace. Or motorcycle guys in the canyon. Totally get what you're up to, man. Totally get where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Y'all are,
Stilt guys in the swamp.
Yeah, you know, stilt guys.
You don't need to know anything about them. And it's like, all right, yeah, this, I could see why they would live in the swamp and have ways to walk around like that.
Yeah, they're avoiding the toxic
dew. Give this movie some due for visual storytelling. You could tell who the henchmen were instantly because of their weird blankety trench coats. Like, but you know, it, like I say, it was weird and blankety. Like, it had an idea. We're going to do visual storytelling, and then executed it kind of meh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece of shit.
Well, look at that. Isn't it?
Well, hello, everybody. Taking a quick moment out of the show here to talk to you about our sponsor today, Casper.com. Oh, I love Casper. Online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. I have a Casper mattress. I got to use it for 100 days before I decided if I liked it or not or wanted to keep it. And turns out I did, and I kept it. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry, and they're cutting the costs of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. I love it. You can buy it easily online, completely risk-free. Why don't you spend a fraction of the cost of the thing you're going to have to get anyway? And be a good mattress, right? Everyone wants a good one. So get a Casper one. They offer free delivery, painless returns within a 100-day period. Jeez, 100 days. Think of that. You don't have to go lie down in a showroom where a million people have lied before. You don't know what's going on in there, right? You don't know what kind of stuff's been on that bed. And you don't have to deal with some pushy salesman who's trying to push in one direction or the other. You just get it and you're done. They're all made in the USA. All right? Did you know, statistically speaking, even if you lie on a bed in a showroom, it has no correlation as to whether that bed's right for you or not? It's all just like impulse buying. Don't do that. Get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king-size mattress. Think of those and compare those to the industry averages. It's an outstanding price point. Save an additional $50 off as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/filmsack and entering the code FILMSACK. That's casper.com/filmsack. For $50 off, use the code FILMSACK. That's FILMSACK is the code. Terms and conditions may apply. Thank you so much, Casper. And thanks for helping me sleep better.
All right. You laid that out quite well.
Well, in that case, that sounds to me like a cue for some clips. Let's play some clips. I don't have a ton because, again, the dialogue's, I don't know, it's all kind of lame. But,
right.
But I'll play what I got, and that's really all I can do in this life. So here they are. Let's start with this one about product placement. What?
What?
I don't know what this is. What?
Hello, film.
Nope, that's a call. All right.
that would be a call.
No, it's another one. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Here it is.
Hey, this is Ricky from...
Nope, that's not it. Okay, here it
Get
is.
Get out of the call folder.
I found it. It's called Check Out Fargo Lady.
Eon. We have an assignment. We want you to sabotage Goodchild's central surveillance facility. Your entry will be noticed, but we will briefly disrupt their interior alarms. Surveillance is their greatest tool against us. As long as Monikans can be seen, we can be targeted.
That's that lady from Raising Arizona. She's in there.
And Charlize Theron was wearing the interview. A panty on her head, so that was very appropriate.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see. They had cool... What? I don't know what I wrote. Oh, I know. I know. I spelled the word sounds wrong. I like the sounds of
that. Yeah, I could sleep to that, actually. That would be...
What?
I could sleep to that. That would be
it feels like there's a microphone in Neo's pod in the Matrix or something.
Sharper right. Image sound pod setting number 5 is gastric noises, apparently. Right.
Setting number 2, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, perfect. Oh,
gotta see a guy about a horse. All right, next up.
My joke and made it better.
It's not bad. Here are your... Oh, we didn't even talk about how the main what seems like bad character in the movie turns out to be the good guy in the movie, who is never a good guy in any movie he ever has been in.
Oh, yeah. Man. That's Zonker, the thing.
Zonkus.
Yeah.
Zonkus.
Yeah, I couldn't trust him because he looks like a bad guy.
In right. every movie he's ever been in, he doesn't exist yeah. except for bad movies where he has to play a bad guy. And in this one, it's like, oh, we flipped the script. Johnny Lee Miller, little shiny-faced Boy Scout. He's the bad guy. All right, here's your bad men.
I'm getting worried about you, Orin. This edge you've taken. Displays like that aren't helpful to us.
I believe in protecting what we've created. I won't apologize for that.
This was created to allow me to do my work. I can't do that if you can't control yourself.
Understood.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, brothers, brothers.
Yes.
Orin. Okay. I can't deal with a guy named Orin because we have a lifelong senator here, Orin Hatch, Utah Senator mm-hmm. Orin Hatch.
Lifelong. He's been a senator since the 1700s.
Pretty much, so. Yeah. It feels like it. It feels like it. That guy never gets not.
Working on my third century as a senator.
He says things like, I remember during the Anita Hill hearings. I'm like, shit, dude, you shouldn't be in there still. But anyway, yeah. His name is Orin, and it bugs me when I hear the name Orin because I don't really like him as a senator.
You want to say orange.
Yeah.
Orange. Orange is new black.
O.J. Simpson's name is Orin.
That's right. Orenthal? Well, Orenthal.
Right, yeah.
Is Orin always short for Orenthal?
I don't know.
Orenthal.
I'm not an expert.
O.J.
I'm not an Orin expert.
Orenthal, only use it as directed. All right, here's a...
I didn't realize Martin Zakas was in Lord of the Rings. He's...
He's the elves. Elf guy that comes and helps him out at the wall. Do you remember in the... So he's the one that bumps into him in the forest first and finds him and then takes him back to the queen. And right. he's kind of a badass in that movie, like pretty great. Mm-hmm. And then later he's like, we are here to help you because we're elves and whatever.
you just brought up an interesting subject for me.
Right.
And I just want to talk to you guys about it.
All right.
Where do we stand on movie is different than source material?
You mean
like,
where,
isn't it possible for a movie to improve on the previous stuff?
Yes,
absolutely. Sure. I think I think that's where this movie failed. If you take all the thematic elements of what made the animated series special and you pull them away from this movie, you still got a movie. So
yeah.
To me, it's like, why even bother?
Yeah, but changes that
improve. Mm-hmm. I'm all for changes for change's sake, you know, fake web shooters organic web shooters versus hand built web shooters, for example, is a change that doesn't need to be made. And so why make that change? But if it's a change that does improve the story or a change that fits the technology that maybe didn't exist in the time that the original source material is written. Totally agree with.
Like Schumacher nipples, right? Like Schumacher nipples is a bad choice. Like, what are you doing?
It's a bad choice. That's a change for change's sake.
Yeah.
I didn't even know why that change was.
But like Daryl Dixon in The Walking Dead, good choice. Good job.
Good choice, yes. Yeah. Okay, you know what, Scott? Right. Bats have nipples.
Yeah.
Let's live with it.
All right. Okay, but stop with the visual artistic changes and focus on the script changes for a second. Like, because in Lord of the Rings, the big complaint was that there were things in the movie that you saw and heard that weren't in the books.
Yeah.
And
like him at the wall,
that
dude at the wall was not in the book, for example,
which makes me, it just makes me stop and say, but what if the people who wrote this and then made a movie around it thought, okay, I've improved this. This is a better story now. Like, I could imagine Sam Raimi saying, I've improved, is it Sam Raimi with the web shooters?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Like, I've improved this story. This is a better story.
Now he's more like a real spider because he can. Yeah.
He excretes his own.
Like a spider, you shoot it out of his butt.
Right. I don't know. It just that complaint, I feel like that complaint is often very hollow.
Yeah.
Like, because I saw something the first time, if it's ever different, it's wrong. It's bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, Han shot first. I promise you, mm-hmm. if you had seen the Greedo shoot first version and then later saw the Han shoot first version, you would have hated that Han shot first. I promise you.
Yeah.
But yeah, but knowing the source material, okay, the Spider-Man example, knowing the source material, Peter Parker is a bookworm. He's a scientist. He, you know, he developed those, and it's kind of a thing to his character. Like, all right, he gets these powers, but he needs something else to add on to it. Oh, I'll come up with web shooters. It's kind of a cool character development in the comics that I think adds to his character that they didn't have in the movie.
I think comic book source material is probably different than a lot of other things because there are so many universes to all of them that a lot of this stuff has been explored in different universes. So you go, okay, well, in this particular series of Spider-Man, yeah, he did have more of an organic web shooter. So we can say we're pulling from that source material. Since there's such a limited universe in Eon Flux, I think you had to tread a little more lightly. Anything you changed, you would go, well, that's not a different universe. That's just you screwing up, jerk.
easier to film.
Right.
Can you agree that this movie is probably easier on someone who's never seen any of the previous stuff?
Absolutely.
I've never seen much of the previous stuff, so I'm a good example of that. And I had no problem with the story. I just thought the story was boring.
I think let me answer this question by saying this. You have to earn it. And the way you earn it is you freak everybody out at first with your changes, but then as time goes on, you go, oh man, I can't imagine this without it. And I'll go back to the Daryl thing in Walking Dead. He doesn't exist in the comic book. There are people who are alive now that are dead in the book, people who are dead in the book who are alive now. They've really gone lots of new directions, yet still having some of the backdrops that you know and love from the comic. And they're doing that with what seems like real skill, and they're earning it. And they've had to earn it over a number of seasons. Like, things looked a little grim in season two, but they've pulled out of that. Season six is maybe some of the best TV on TV this year. And Daryl is this perfect example of change the source material in a very fundamental way.
Yeah.
And it's better for it. And I think it can be done, but they have to earn it. So a movie to pull it off, Lord of the Rings, I think, pulled it off because it said, I won't say this about The Hobbit. The Hobbit did not pull it off, in my opinion. The Hobbit was kind of, it didn't earn the same pedigree. But those first three movies, at least at their time, said, look, we're making these changes, and it works somehow. The big spider shows up in Two Towers instead of where it's supposed to show up, or whatever. All these other little tweaks and changes. You know, where's Bombadil? I don't know. Probably not good for a movie. Like, they earned it.
Yeah, you don't want it. Yeah. Some things don't work in movies, like all the little sing-songy stuff that doesn't, it's great in the books, but you don't want to see it on screen. You don't want to see them singing it.
No.
Don't sing it.
Don't sing it, dude. Don't. That's the answer. Don't sing it. All right.
That's an interesting point. That's a really interesting point. The books are written funny. They're told in an odd order, and they're filled with poems and songs that you don't need in a movie.
Yeah.
However, for whatever crazy reason, there is a song in Return of the King, and it's freaking brilliant.
Yeah, it's really well done.
And you're like, okay, this was clearly inspired by the books and is better than the books.
There are two of them. There's two of them. There's the sad Fool of a Took song, and then there's one at the end where Vigo's singing.
Sure. But I'm talking about the one in Minas Tirith.
With Pippin or Mary or whichever one.
Like,
it was.
You can add things to your source material. You know, you can change your source material and it can be great. But for some reason, if you get enough people who like source material enough, you can't. You're never going to satisfy them.
Did you ever see a more disgusting scene of a king eating a tomato up close? Ugh, that fringe guy man, just yeah. grossing me yeah. out, man. So gross. All right, here's some dialogue that is 18 seconds long and I think indicative of the kind of stuff people say in the movie.
What happened?
My sources were clear on this. Eon Flux is the best the Monikans have.
She failed.
It's the first time she has.
I wanted this done cleanly. My brother
will be vulnerable.
Preparing his speech.
Tomorrow.
I love how everyone's like only using parts of the sentence to make a complete paragraph in that scene. It was really, it's a lot of that. A lot of sort
Mad
of.
Libs, basically.
Yeah. All right, we're going to play a little game called Add-On. I'm going to say a word and then you say one. And by the end, we'll have a story. Here's some more dumb dialogue.
Situation has changed.
Our orders haven't.
I'm not following orders anymore.
Why are you doing this, Ian?
Everything has become more complicated.
No, it's simple.
Trevor may now be responsible for Una's death.
Trevor.
I'm trying to find out who is.
Your mission was to kill Goodchild.
That's my impression of that.
Maybe it was written by a 7-year-old, now that I think about it. I think
14-year-old is illustrated. Too much credit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, in a future where tears hold recorded memories and then show up as video in a pool, you'd think they'd get better at robot lady voices, but no.
Una Flux, reassigned as Sasha Krylov.
We require more Vespene gas.
There was a lot of outdoor voices in this movie, always telling. There were no signs, nothing written, so I was wondering if people could actually even read, because there was, everywhere you went, there was some lady or man outside.
Yeah.
White courtesy phone for Eon Flux, or, you know, it's always something.
Your base is under attack.
Action.
Yeah.
I mean, your base is under attack.
We're still, so this is 2005, so we're, what, 2 years away from smartphones, and I feel like that informed a lot of change in science fiction. But anyway, there's that. Here's the Wilhelm scream in the movie. That's a pretty obvious one.
It was a super obvious one, too.
Yeah, it was hard to... Usually a little more subtle. Like, Superman, Batman had one, and it bugged me. They always bug me. I don't like that people do it.
Sometimes it just takes you right out of the film. It's funny because it's like a cool little Easter egg, but it does take you right out of the film.
Yep. I mean, I like it as a tradition, but I actually don't like it when it gets used, which is...
I would actually have liked it in something like Force Awakens if they'd used it several times. I would have gotten over it.
Yeah. Well, they only used it once, right? Didn't they use it once in that movie?
And
I think
it's buried. You can barely hear it.
Yeah, which is the way it should be. If you're going to put it in, make it hard to hear. Unless you're George Lucas, then have your Wookiee sound like Tarzan. All right. Here's a bring you back thing.
I kept your DNA hidden here, dormant. I've waited until now to bring you back.
I tucked it into my little weird burrito body.
To bring you
Would
back.
You like extra sour cream?
The guacamole cost extra.
To bring you back.
Could you lick my genital wounds? I can't reach them.
To bring you back.
That is the best description for why he looks the way he does.
It really is.
I'm sad for my Twitter post because it's not as funny as that.
Listen, Pete, if you lick there, you're gonna get all the medicine won't stay, so you need to wear this cone suit.
You're gonna pull out your stitches.
Yeah, you dummy.
Don't do that.
All right, here's a final clip. Live once for real.
Now we can move forward. To live once. For real.
For real, man.
For real.
Hey,
for
man. We're going to live for real, man. Oh, my gosh.
That audio clip that they're right there just pretty much just sums up the whole feeling of this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is Equilibrium, Maze Runner, Hunger Games.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, the outside world. Ooh, look, there's a whole place outside of here. How weird.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
The very first thing I said aloud while watching this movie was, oh, she's Divergent. You can tell she's Divergent.
Now think about this for a second. In a way, it's not different than good example or, you know, like what's another example? Mad Max Fury Road. She's on that like thing getting lifted up. The crowd's going wild. She's changed everything. And Morton Joe's face has been ripped out under a tire. All is well. Mad Max going off into the crowd, hiding in there. That scene works for me 100,000% and is totally tropey. All right. Tropey as shit at the end of that movie. Yeah. But it worked. Here I just go, I'm soaking in, I'm all wet with trope. Too much trope.
What is this on me? It's like
trope. We're talking about the end of the very, very end of the movie, right?
Yeah.
I know I said earlier sometimes you shouldn't blast the audience in the face with what's going on. You should make them figure it out. The end of this movie, I'm the opposite on that. I'm like, what? What are we? Where? Mm-hmm. How is it? Like, have they rebuilt the world, or they gone back in time? Are we just seeing a scene from 400 years earlier? It was just confusing, and it wasn't satisfying to me to end that way.
It was like the end of Battlestar Galactica, which I hated too for similar reasons. I don't like how that ended, and I don't like how this ended. It's like, wait, where are we? Are they real? Are we real? Is that a car they're standing next to? Like, what the hell is this?
That's a good point. If you have too many dream sequences or alternate dimensions in a movie, I cease caring where I am.
Yeah. That's not good. I thought her saying this on the way out was weird.
Good dog, poor day.
That was an odd thing to end a film with.
My favorite part of the film.
Yeah, really odd, strange choice.
No, Peter Chung said some stuff about this movie and how he felt how it was derivative, and he said one of the things he said is they would soften the movie for the public, and they felt like the public wasn't hip enough to appreciate the raw, pure, unadulterated source like they do. So
okay, but I translate that as not enough porn in this movie. And I just feel like if you just added more porn, I don't know that right. More people would have gone to see it or liked it.
I think a feature-length, animated, well-fleshed-out Aeon Flux would have been the thing I would have preferred.
Right. And the Animatrix kind of does that. It's a little longer form. You got to remember these animated shorts were on Liquid Television were only like, you know, anywhere between 3 to 15 minutes. I mean,
yeah,
they were
that's true.
Super short. But they were not short enough for Ibbot, because even that wouldn't.
No, it didn't even hold my attention that way. You know, here's what I'd love. We talked about this last week. Somebody asked like if there's a film on that we could that we wish was streaming so that we could do it on FilmSack. I wish Heavy Metal, the animated Heavy Metal movies, were available on streaming, because I think those would be perfect and a perfect complement to these. For some reason, those short stories in their work, and for whatever reason, the translation into Aeon Flux.
Don't you ever always feel dirty when you watched the heavy metal
yeah.
movie?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And read the book.
My cousins and my uncle snuck me in to see it. I was way too young to see it, and they snuck me into the theater to see it. Midnight showing or something at the...
It was like the great... it was one of those things in my household that was like Benny Hill or something else that was like forbidden. So like if you went to a comic book shop and found a copy of Heavy Metal magazine, and you're like, dude, right. There are cartoon people in here doing it. You know?
They're doing it, man.
They're doing it. When you're 12, that's just it. You know, mm-hmm. That's just it. That's what you want when you're 12. It's part of our imperative to reproduce and carry on mankind.
Right.
All right. Next. What's this here? This is, this. It's the FilmSack checklist, and it goes like this. Painful subdermal communication balls. Check. We forgot about those. They're the things you pulled out of her back. Gross.
Yeah, she was scratching a bone or something.
It was like
it was
a big
weird.
Zit or whatever. It was gross. Many cherry blossoms died to bring you this movie. Check. and finally, in the super weirdo future, we still need regular old bullets. Check. Trek stuff. Daryl never got me stuff, so I don't know what the connections were. I don't know if we want to try to find any of those live or not, but there was probably somebody on Star Trek once who was also on this.
If you just would say this to me before we start.
I know. I forgot. I try to remember to do that. I totally spaced it. But yeah, there's probably somebody. Like, I feel like the Elf King guy probably did some Star Trek thing, but I could be wrong on that. Feels like a dude that may have guest starred on Enterprise or something. But I don't know. I'm sure there's some
maybe all the background people were wearing Star Trek Next Generation.
Hand-me-downs. Like wardrobe by leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Data, you're not a real man. Yeah, those people. I could totally see it.
Pleasure Planet wardrobe guy right here.
Right here. Just paint it black and put it on or we're good. Soundtrack great. I give it a B for basic. There's nothing special going on. It's fine. It was fine. It's not the worst thing in the movie.
Are you kidding me?
It was all
I'm
right.
Sorry.
It was all right.
It was 2005. They had like some of that 2005 techno thing going on, and that was okay sometimes.
Yeah, it was all right.
I was exclaiming because I searched Pete Postlethwaite and I just knew he had been in something Star Trek. I mean, look at the guy.
Yeah,
sure.
But nope, he was never in Star Trek. No. That's amazing.
I don't know if he'd stoop that low. Although, well, what am I saying?
What did we just see?
Yeah, what did we just see?
High cinema? What?
No, I mean, you know, that's not stooping low. That's just falling down.
I'm not doing a trek. You can forget it.
In the name of the Father, I will not do a trek.
Right.
Anyway, wasn't he Kaiser Soze, or was the fake Kaiser Soze?
No, he was Kobayashi.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Kaiser Soze's...
Was he the Kobayashi Maru?
But he pretended to be...
There you go.
Him.
There's the Star Trek connection. He was Kobayashi Maru and Usual Suspects.
I haven't seen that movie in so long. I feel like I owe it to myself to watch it again. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah. Watch it with the kids, too.
Yeah, real good for the kids, that movie.
Well, you know, I mean, there's no nudity or anything, so...
Isn't there a... Are you sure? Isn't there some humping and dumping? I don't know.
Humping sure, dumping. There's no humping and dumping. I can't
That's
remember
my favorite Star Trek noon activity.
Gotta hump him and dump him. All right,
just a burned up Hungarian.
Here's the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. And let's start with Randy.
Eon Flux. A beautiful, action-packed, nonsensical reminder that in the future you'll be born in a blimp, clothed in rags or choke leather, and you'll have fly swatter eyelids, just like you've always wanted.
Oh, by the way, it's the only real reference to the cartoon that I could see other than the nighttime choker teddy.
Right. Where the eyeball.
Where she catches a fly in her eye. And all I can think about is that thing's been landing on shit all day. Like, you're going to have the worst case of pink eye if you're catching flies in your eye, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that the thing? Doesn't every time a fly land, he regurgitates so that he can digest whatever he lands on it? Isn't that like their thing?
Yes.
So that means he immediately
landed. Just ask Jeff Goldblum. I don't know.
Yes, they do. They glurp out their goop and then he eats it again or whatever. And I'm telling you, what he ate last was camel shit, and now it's in your eye. Ugh. You guys know how I feel about this sort of thing. I do not like that at all. It grosses me out.
It was fun.
All right. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Eon Flux, like male pattern baldness 400 years in the future. Sorry, Daryl, still no cure. But we do have monkey hand feet. Monkey hand feet.
Wow. Okay.
I got totally taken out of the movie because there was like everybody was fine. The whole movie, and all of a sudden one of these guards walks in. He's got male pattern baldness, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Haven't fixed that yet.
Are you telling me?
Well, they said that Charlize's DNA was damaged.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
What about Johnny Lee Miller is kind of bald, right? And I think he had fake hair.
He does that whole not male pattern baldness.
He does that whole pulling the hair forward thing over like the, you know, I'm just gonna make some long bangs to cover it up.
What's he doing now? Is he up to stuff?
He's doing Elementary. He's playing Sherlock on CBS.
Oh right, people like that show.
We watched the first season. I enjoyed it a lot, and then it just got really tedious and old and repetitive.
Oh well, F that then. Let's go watch Hackers again. Yeah, let's watch Hackers again. It's fine.
Sure.
Hackers was 10 years before this film. Think of that.
Oh, interesting.
And that was 10 years ago. So Hackers is 20 years old. Holy shit. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Eon Flux. I wrote it phonetically. Pete Postlethwaite deserves an Oscar for the first movie appearance of longtime snack pitchman, Mr. Peanut.
Oh,
I like it.
That a lot. He took the helmet off,
though. Wonderful.
It was a headless part. Mr. Peanut.
Yeah, it's cosplay. Can't be in that thing all day. Doesn't have like a you gotta have a little air conditioner in there. All right, well done, everyone. Those were great. Why don't we do one of these? It's the alternative title just handed to me. Get the old man a better outfit, or guy who is always a bad guy is suddenly a good guy. Those are your alternate titles. Oh, an email from Calgary, Canada. This is Derek from Calgary. He says this: Hi guys, I've noticed over the years that it's a Unix system has long been a deep problem for Scott and you guys. And I get it. Silliness about computers often breaks a movie for me. On the other hand, realism is in that department wins 1,000 points. Last year, Eraser. Why does he say Eraser? Anyway, Scott opened up about his love for Jurassic Park, notwithstanding that scene. And so I thought I should finally try to help him out here. Why Ariana Richards' character, Alexa, is in fact a real Unix system. The UI she's using was an early 3D graphical file system browser that ran on IBM's IRIX servers in the very early 90s. I myself used an open source version of the same shell around the same time for shareware/Linux 1.2.
I find this interesting.
Yeah, hold on. This is good. The great thing about it as a plat device is it allows Alexa or makes it so she had to intervene with a bunch of different hardware to save her friends. Closing and opening doors and whatnot. And in a Unix system, every piece of hardware, whether it's a door or a cash register, is represented by just another file in the directory tree, along with your plain text files. Blah, blah, blah. Skip forward. Bottom line, it's totally real. That could have worked. It could have been a thing she'd recognize.
I was with him. When I was watching it, I felt the same way. I felt like it was a pretty realistic representation of computer tech at the time.
Yeah. It actually helps me a lot. I incessantly make fun of that, thinking it's the worst representation of computer tech in movies in a very long time.
As you should.
Now, the other movie has a lot of other very, very bad choices. Like when Newman's, that's fine from a hacker standpoint, but when he's talking to the dude on the dock about leaving early because the storm's coming in, and I see the QuickTime play button going and the little pre-recorded thing move, and I know it's not live, then I get frustrated. because I know right. on that side of it. But if the Unix thing is more real than I'm, than I am, then I take
seriously.
It all back.
I think the delivery of that and her surprise was the part of that that made me laugh, because it was, she was so excited.
It's a Unix system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that was what the delivery of it was what I think, made me laugh about that.
Yeah.
Well, issue a chone command to that writer, because he owned that statement.
I agree.
Ooh.
Pretty Sudu. Good. Pretty good.
Chone.
We got.
I mean, this
and,
is
and Chagurp, because he, you know, the whole group was changed by it too.
Right. He was the Antoine Chagurp of that thing. Listen, this is the thing where my brother, the air traffic controller, starts talking about pushing 10. For everyone else, there's just a. You know, it's either good or bad. It's a problem or it isn't. Like, the little details are really not anything that most people really care about.
No, you know, most of the time you don't.
They either saw it and it was believable, or they didn't, and you fell into this latter category. You saw it and it wasn't believable enough.
Yeah, and the problem is, it's when you're close to the source material that you start to have trouble. And if you were working in that area, or you understand computer tech, or you're a nurse and you watch ER or whatever the comparison is, any cop show, like any actual detective watching a cop show, like a procedural, just wants to roll their eyes and kill themselves because it's just terrible. So, I think it just depends on that. And if you're just an average workaday dude who's, you know, got nothing to do with those particular industries, it's all just dumb fun.
It really brings me back to Armageddon and watching that alternate soundtrack by the actual scientists who were consulted on the film.
Yeah, that's crazy. Know?
And like they tried really hard, you know?
Yeah.
But that whole thing is not for everybody.
Yep.
It's not for anybody, quite frankly. No one's going to be entertained by these scientists explaining why something is actually okay.
Now, while I watch out of my window here as we speak, I can see a man of Mexican descent is working on some construction next door. They're building a house next door to us. He is now entering a green porta potty John. While he does that, I'm going to play this call about belly button talk from Armageddon.
Hey, this is Ricky from Northern New Hampshire, and I wanted to touch on the subject about belly buttons that you guys were discussing on the Armageddon episode. Scott, I completely agree with you. I used to work as a piercer in a tattoo shop. The two top piercings were always tongues and belly buttons. And I would pierce anyone's mouth faster than I would do a belly button. Because belly buttons, you have to clean out with rubbing alcohol because they smell so bad. Completely agree with you. Belly buttons are gross. Have a good one.
See, look, back me up, son. Everybody needs to just lay off Scott and his hatred of the belly button gross, because it's gross. Son. It's gross.
No, Scott, everybody needs to clean themselves. They need to wash. This person called in to tell you that some people don't wash.
Right, but were we to assume that a bunch of roughnecks on a rig have clean? Well, I guess it's just her we're talking about.
It's just her, yeah.
Yeah, she's probably
a meticulous belly button scrubber.
got a little
toothbrush she keeps in the shower.
She's got the Q-tip out. They tell you how to do. They tell you how to wash your belly button on the Q-tip box. If you look at it, it tells you you're supposed to do it gently around the edges and not supposed to poke it in there.
Do you think she got advice from her dad? Hey, Dad, how do you clean your belly button? Jamie's got her again.
No, there's a deleted scene where Ben Affleck goes, "All right, well, the gazelle is making its way down to the. Oh my God, this smells horrendous!
Right, the caribou poop in here. Oh dear, Jesus!"
All right. Thank you for the call and the email. You guys know you can send those to us anytime, 801-471-0462, or email us at filmtech@gmail.com.
When you first started playing clips and you mistakenly were playing calls, I thought we were going to have like 7 calls.
Oh, I spread them out. I hang on to them. So I've got more for next week and the week after and that sort of thing. Yeah. I don't want to overwhelm anyone. So yes, I do. Wow. I have them. I have some in the chamber. How do they say that? They got two.
You got a bullet in the chamber.
Bullet in the chamber. So next week we continue this wild ride down memory lane. I don't know what that means. All right. Sorry. That
was wrong. Is that you or was that recording?
It was a clip. Sorry. Oh. Can we now talk about next week's movie? I don't know what it is. What is it?
Oh, we're going to watch Contact.
Oh, no way.
Oh, I show The Saint on this list.
We're going to watch The Saint.
Oh, The Saint.
With The Saint or Contact.
We're going to have Contact with The Saint.
That's right. The Saint will wear contacts.
Next week. Doesn't somebody hate this movie? Is it you, Rainer?
Yes. Good. No, I love The Saint.
No, he loves The Saint. Show. I dislike it. I hated it in the theater, and I'm excited to see whether I want it, whether it's anything better for me now, because I really disliked it when I saw it. I thought it was boring. I wanted to be like America James Bond, and it was so boring to me. Like, just slow and bleh. I just didn't like it. And I was a big Val Kilmer fan. You couldn't tear me away from Val Kilmer movies. But this one...
I'm hoping that you saw it before you gained an appreciation for film scores, because, oh, the score for this film. Oh,
it's good, so huh? Good.
It is good.
All right.
It is good.
Have you seen it, Dunham, or Ibbot?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, so everyone's seen it.
I don't remember it, but I've seen it.
I just remember being completely and utterly bored in it.
Yeah, I think that's what I remember too. Yeah. It's like, Val Kilmer's in that, right? Yeah. I think he shoots stuff.
Team Gibbet, maybe. Mm-hmm. We'll see when we get there. Anyway, that's...
But I remember saying to myself, oh, the score is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's good. That's the Ibbot for the save.
Ibbot for the save. So that's next week, everybody. Cue it up. It's on Netflix. It's The Saint. And in the meantime, go to filmsack.com. That's where you can find all our links and all our stuff. Of course, the show's available wherever you get your podcasts. So if you haven't gotten it before, get it now. And I guess if you're listening, you already did. So what am I telling you for? Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. Again, that phone number is 801-471-0462 on Twitter. Find us at filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian. And for Randy, we'll see you next time.
Monkey hand feet.
Monkey. Monkey hand feet. Murder grass. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Yeah. Huh?